Morning, everyone. It's really good to be with you this morning. Have you ever had what you can only describe as dry spells in your spiritual life? Those times when you feel like you're in the middle of a desert and God seems so far away. You know, I've encountered people in my life who would attribute such dry spells to a lack of expectancy and lack of faith on my part. In particular, I'm reminded of one who insisted that they'd never had times when God seemed distant and challenged me by saying, if I expected nothing from God, I would get it every time. Needless to say, I can't relate to someone who's never had spells when God seemed distant. I can honestly say there have been those times for me. Perhaps there too have been occasions when this has happened that it has been because of my lack of faith or my sin. But I firmly believe that there are times in the life of every Christian when, even though we're walking by faith and there's no known sin in our life, God seems far away. We pray, but God doesn't appear to answer. We read the Bible, but it doesn't speak to us. We seek God, but it seems as if he's hiding. If that has happened to you, or indeed if you're feeling that way today, be encouraged. You're in good company. David, whom God referred to as a man after my own heart, felt exactly like that. And he shares with us those feelings through Psalm 13, which Gina is now going to read to us.
This morning's reading is Psalm 13, and I'm reading from the NIV version. How long, Lord? Will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts, and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look at me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes, or I will sleep in death, and my enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me.
Thanks for that, Gina. I don't know about you, but the opening verses of this psalm show the frustration of someone who believes they're not being heard. No matter how much David cries out, God does not appear to be listening. Have you ever felt like you're talking till you're blue in the face, but someone just isn't listening to you? Sandy would certainly have sympathy with David the number of times when she's tried to talk to me and I have zoned out completely. The psalm is relatively short, but it can easily be divided up into three parts. We have the problem in the first two verses, the petition, and then the praise. The psalm sets out in a storm, but gradually reduces to a sea of calm. But let's start in the storm. Let's try to understand the turmoil of the psalmist. How easy, in the depths of our despair, when God seems so distant, for us to rally against God, to point the finger and to criticise his apparent inaction. In these first two verses, we see that David's God seemed distant. It seemed as if God had forgotten David, had hidden himself from him, and as if it would last forever. It always seems as if a time of intense trial lasts forever, doesn't it? It seems like it goes on and on and on. The hard thing about waiting is that you have to wait. Don't you hate to wait? I don't know about you, but I am terrible at having to wait. Sandy and I will always set out to go somewhere and meet up with friends, and we set the time that we'll meet them. It's an Ainsley trait to always be early. I'd rather be 30 minutes early than 5 minutes late. And I can feel my frustration rising if somebody else is late. That doctor's appointment that I'm 5 minutes early for, but am now still in the reception 45 minutes later. The meetings at work where someone is late. But this was in their diary. Didn't they realise it was important? You know, I had a fellow colleague a couple of months ago who was late for a Zoom video meeting. They didn't have to physically get anywhere, just switch their computer on. As you can imagine, I was sat there getting angrier and angrier. I don't like to wait. And waiting's especially hard if you don't have much to do while you are waiting. If this psalm was written when David was being pursued by Saul, then David had a lot of time on his hands. He was holed up in the desolate wilderness of Judah. About all he and his men had to do was to get their daily provisions and keep watch. The hours, the days, the weeks, the months dragged on as David waited for God to act. Sometimes it does seem as if God moves so slowly. Until COVID and lockdown became the new normal in our lives have become a constant cycle of hurry, hurry, hurry. But so often God says to us, wait, wait, wait. A preacher who was once in a particularly foul mood explained the problem to a friend. You know, the trouble is, I'm in a hurry, but God isn't. Have you ever noticed the timetable between God's timetable and ours, the difference in that? We think in terms of minutes, hours, and days. But very often God works in terms of years. And the Bible is littered with characters who have to wait for action. Let's start with poor Joseph. God had a plan for Joseph to have power in Egypt. But first, he was sold into slavery. He was sent to a foreign land, falsely accused by Potiphar's wife, thrown into prison. Joseph may well have been the first to echo the entertainment show. Do you remember where it says, I'm a prophet, get me out of here? Or something similar to that. God wanted him in a position of influence in Egypt, but how did he get there? Don't you suppose that Joseph was praying this prayer? Get me out of here, God. But God didn't seem to hear. He may well have seen a glimmer of hope, a glimmer of light when the king's cupbearer was restored to his job. He said to Joseph that he would speak highly of him. But he forgot. And he forgot for 2 years. From this story, we can see Joseph spending the better part of his 20s, either as a slave or in prison in Egypt. What about the Apostle Paul? He was fervent in his endeavours to do works for God. He had little time to do it. He was getting on in his age, but he wanted to go to Rome. But first he was imprisoned on false charges, held in jail for 2 years by the governor of Caesarea, who knew he was innocent, but kept him in prison for potential financial reasons so he might get a bribe. Another governor succeeded this man, and wishing to do the Jews a favour, kept Paul imprisoned. Was Paul living by faith? Certainly. Was Paul praying? Definitely. So why did he have to sit there for more than 2 years? It's in these circumstances that we find the psalmist. He'd been anointed as king by the prophet Samuel. But Saul was pursuing him. This had been going on for years. Where was God? Had he forgotten about David? When God seems distant, it is always bound to affect our emotions. In this case, David is on an emotional roller coaster. What does it say? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts every day? Sorrow in my heart. How long will my enemy triumph over me? Saul was still king with all the comforts of his palace. David was sleeping in caves. Saul was the bad guy. But David's intentions were honourable. He trusted in his God, but Saul hadn't. Saul wasn't seeking God, but David was. Saul was trying to kill David. Didn't God see this? Didn't he know what was happening? And that's where we often find ourselves in an extended time of suffering. We call out, but God doesn't seem to answer. We wrestle with how to get out of our circumstances, but nothing works. Our emotions take us from the height of hopes to to the depths of despair. Nothing works. Meanwhile, it seems those who are not following God live life in the palace whilst we are in the cave. What can we learn from this psalm? How is God glorified? Firstly, and I can't stress this too strongly, God has not forgotten you. Isaiah 49 tells us, can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she's born? Though she may forget, I will not forget you. Well, that's all well, you might say, Rob, but how do we sit this alongside the stories of Joseph, of Paul and David, where it seemed that God had forgotten them? They were all in the most unpleasant circumstances for years. What was happening to them during this time? What is clear is that God has great plans for his people, and he certainly did for these three. God was building maturity into these men as they learned to trust him. Just as it takes years to grow a sturdy oak tree, so it takes years to build godly character qualities that are needed to be an effective servant of the Lord. Think of the responsibilities that were upon these three characters. This was a work in progress. There is no such thing as instant godliness. You know, we have instant everything in our society today. Instant coffee, instant drive-by McDonald's, instant cameras. But there is no instant godliness. David was anointed as king in his teens. He had a strong faith at that time, as it was seen in the victory over Goliath. Did God put him on the throne when he turned 21? No. 25? No. 26, 27? 28? 29? No. Through all those years of running from Saul, living in caves, David learned to wait upon God. God was developing his man. And you know, that's so out of joint with our rush, rush world. But that's how God works. If God has you shut up in some frustrating circumstances and you've racked your brain trying to figure a way out, but nothing has worked, you see the godless prospering while you suffer, and it seems like God is far away, hang on in there. Let God do his perfect work in you. He hasn't forgotten you. Learn to wait on him. He has everything in hand. And David starts to realize this after his initial worries and concerns for his situation. He begins his petition. He calls to the Lord. Why is it that some Christians don't grow into maturity and are not used to their full potential? Perhaps could it be partly how they react to those situations when God seems distant? When God seems distant, instead of crying out as David does, they shrug their shoulders and say, never mind, and drift back into the world around us for answers. Perhaps they look to the latest self-help book that's flying off the shelves in Waterstones. Perhaps they look to the thoughts of the variety of experts that flood our televisions with their view of the world. Or, as Paul mentioned recently, do we look to Facebook for wisdom? Let's hope not. Any attempt to find the answers or wisdom from any other source than God is doomed to fail. David didn't do that. When God seemed distant, he called on him to answer him. Instead of turning from God, he turned to him. Instead of complaining to men about God, David complained to God about men. Matthew Henry, in one of his commentaries on the Bible, said, we should never allow ourselves to make any complaints but what are fit to be offered up to God and what drives us to our knees. So in this middle section of the psalm, David is helping us in framing our petitions to God. Firstly, our prayers need to be focusing away from our apparent needs and for happiness, but should be wholly about God's glory. David's prayers were not about a return to happiness, riches, and a comfy bed. His worry was that the enemy would rejoice. If David was God's anointed king and he died at the hands of his enemies, would this give God glory? God's honour was tied up in David's prayer. If you set out in your life to trust God and God alone, God defends his own honour by defending you. So when we're in a time of crisis, call out to God to deliver you. Not solely for your relief, but for God's honour. When God seems distant, that is especially the time when we should be seeking him. So often when David appeared to lose the sense of God's presence in his life, he went after it with this unquestionable thirst and energy. It's easy to have faith when God's presence is real and when you see him at work in your life. The real test is when he seems distant. Do we seek him then? Seek God especially when he seems distant. Crave his presence and his touch on your life like never before. Someone once wrote that an awareness of God and the enemy is virtually the hallmark of every psalm of David. The positive and the negative charge which produced the driving force of David's best years. Dr. Howard Hendricks said, when you are doing what Jesus Christ has called you to do, you can count on two things and you can stake your life on it. You'll possess spiritual power because you have the presence of Christ, and you'll experience opposition because the devil doesn't concentrate on secondary targets. He never majors on the minor. So there we have it. Fourthly, David was fearing for his life. David talks about giving light to my eyes. Now, what does he mean by that? For the Hebrews, dim eyes were a sign that the vital powers were growing dim and that death was approaching. Bright eyes were a sign of life. David calls out to God to enlighten his eyes, that is, to bring him back from the brink of death. Back to life again. Paul reminds us that he despaired even of life. His co-workers in the gospel said, we had the sentence of death within ourselves in order that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. That's in 2 Corinthians 1, 8 to 9. You know, sometimes God seems distant. And he allows us to go to the brink, to come to the end of ourselves, so that we learn to trust him more. Whatever their intensity, all trials are designed to bring us to a deeper trust in the Lord. If we dodge them without learning that lesson, we miss what God has for us and what he has planned. David came to that point of trust. Thus we see that David's problem led to his petition, which led to the final part of the psalm, that of praise. You see how we're moving from the storm to the calm. And so we have these final two verses. David has not yet been delivered from his trials, but he trusts in the unfailing love of God, and a calm assurance comes over him. His heart is filled with joy as he thinks of the deliverance which God will bring about. By faith, David counts God's future deliverance as past and says, I will sing to the Lord because he has been good to me. Had David's circumstances changed one bit from the start of the psalm when he felt confused, depressed and forsaken by God? David was still hiding in caves. Saul was still on the throne trying to kill David. So what had changed by the time we get to the end of the psalm? In the few verses, one thing had dramatically changed. David's focus. From focusing on himself and his problems at the start of the psalm, David shifted his thoughts to God's loyal love and salvation. That shift in focus moved him from confusion and depression to joy and praise. And it didn't happen accidentally either. In verse 5, David makes a deliberate choice to rely on God's love. He chooses to interpret his circumstances by God's love, rather to interpret God's love by his circumstances. In a time of trial, it's so easy to be led down a route where we question God's love. But we have to resist that temptation and to affirm with God's word that he causes all things to work together for good to those who love God. With Joseph, we must affirm that even though Those who wronged us meant it for evil. God meant it for our ultimate good. So we deliberately choose to trust in God's loyal love. So summing up, Charles Spurgeon was walking through the English countryside with a friend. He noticed a barn with a weather vane. At the top of the vane were the words, "God is love." Spurgeon got quite upset by this and remarked to his friend that this was such an inappropriate place for such a message because weather vanes are changeable, but God's love is constant. But Spurgeon's friend, who was very wise, disagreed. He said, "You misunderstood the meaning, Charles. The weather vane is stating the truth that no matter which way the wind blows, God is love." This morning, if the words of the psalmist are speaking into your life, if you're crying out in desperation, "How long, Lord?" Join David, the psalmist, in deliberately trusting in God's unfailing love, however the winds of circumstance are blowing. To take a verse from Psalm 103, "As high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his loving kindness for those who fear him." If your trials have been with you days, weeks, months, or even years, as the theme tune to Friends often reminds us, remember, when God works in our lives, he's building things to last, and that takes time. What does that old cartoon say? Be patient, God hasn't finished with me yet. Trust me, the finished product is so much better in quality than quick imitations that don't develop trust in the living God. I pray that you'll know God's presence through the psalm this morning. Thank you.